DiscerningHearts.com presents Fountains of Grace, Reflections on Contemporary Spiritual Classics with Donna Garrett. In this particular series of episodes, Donna discusses with Father Daniel Brandenburg, Interior Freedom by Father Jacques Philippe. It is said that despite the most difficult situations that can restrain our physical movement, each person has deep inside a place of freedom that no external power can take away, because God Himself is its source. A person wins inner freedom to the extent that he connects to its source, God Himself, by practicing the virtues of faith, hope, and charity. These theological virtues are the center of the spiritual life. As the basis for interior growth, they become the source of the glorious freedom of the children of God. Written in a simple and inviting style, Interior Freedom, written by Father Jacques Philippe, seeks to liberate the heart and mind to enable it to live the true freedom to which God calls each one. We now begin Fountains of Grace, Reflections of Contemporary Spiritual Classics with Donna Garrett. An excerpt from Interior Freedom by Father Jacques Philippe.
Earlier, we spoke of accepting difficulties with a good will instead of hardening ourselves against them. This idea can be applied to the difficulties that arise by someone else's fault. How should we react to all of the sufferings caused by people around us? Our line of conduct should be exactly the same: to consent to them. Once more, it is not a question of being merely passive. Sometimes we must confront someone whose actions have made us suffer and help him or her realize what has been done and put it right. Sometimes, too, we have a duty to react firmly against unjust situations and protect ourselves or others against harmful actions. But there will always remain a certain amount of suffering that comes from those around us that we can neither avoid or correct. Then we are invited to accept it with hope and forgiveness.
He points out, as hard as it is, we need to learn to forgive other people for making us suffer or disappointing us, and even to accept the problems that they create for us as graces and blessings. But he also points out that this attitude is not spontaneous and it's not natural. I mean, our human nature fights against that.
That's for sure.
Hence why we need God's grace, because it's only through a supernatural outlook that we can actually forgive people, and we can actually see that the suffering that they brought to our lives can bring grace and blessings.
Boy, is that ever true. And that is so true. And that's one of the reasons why it is different to be a Christian. Normal human beings, you go to any culture, they can see that there is an importance in, you know, resigning yourself to reality and, you know, not holding on to grudges. You know, psychology, which is a Christian, if you will, it's not necessarily any Christian foundation, can see all these elements from a psychological standpoint. But it's really only through our faith and through our belief in Jesus Christ and our acceptance of God's unconditional love that we begin to see the importance of forgiveness on a profounder spiritual level and the freedom that that brings to us. I have seen that over and over and over again. People who are enslaved to their own bitterness, resentment, and anger about something that happened to them or something that happened to someone else, and it poisons their life. It poisons their interior. It doesn't allow them to be free, to be happy, to live their life. And on the contrary, when they receive that grace to be able to forgive, which is not merely a human thing, but it's human, which is built up and strengthened by divine grace. When they forgive, then they experience once again the freedom, the happiness. It truly is one of the profounder experiences that I've had as a priest, is helping people to come to that point of forgiving others or forgiving themselves and seeing the joy that comes from that.
Well, I'm always drawn to the Acts of the Apostles, where they talk about you'll know the Christians by their love. Okay, well, all those Christians back in the time of the apostles were not perfect people.
In fact, they were pretty problematic people.
Right, but they exercised great love for each other because they were able to renounce their own pride, look at the dignity and the fact that their fellow man was created by the same God that they were, and move past their differences and their frustrations to become a community of love. And I think of that all the time because we always think, oh, well, you know, oh, they'll know by their love. Well, everybody was great. No, I'm sure they weren't.
No, they were not, no. No, and it's no different today. I mean, you go to any parish, and there are going to be factions and difficulties and people who are very imperfect, scandals that take place, and, you know, mishandling of this. There are mistakes made everywhere within the church. The church is holy, but carries within her bosom these sinners. You know, we're a bunch of sinners, and you know, I always describe, you know, the Regnum Christi movement is something very similar. But we partake of the nature of the church. We are a bunch of sinners striving for holiness. And gosh, we need each other. We need each other's help and support. And that's why Regnum Christi exists, and why other movements and associations exist within the Catholic Church, is because we do need God's grace. We do need the support of others, and we need forgiveness as well.
We all know in our circle of friends and our parish communities, those people who are embittered or who, because of life circumstances, it's like sucked the joy out of them, you know? And you as a human being, you know, for me, my friends, I feel for them because you can tell that they're not happy. And yet me as a person, I can't force them into that happiness. It has to be a conscious choice for them to make that step to diminish their own suffering and their burdens, that puts burden on their shoulders, you know, because they can't forgive.
Well, and the interesting thing about that, too, is that most of the time, those people don't even realize just how bitter and upset that they are and how it's poisoned their own life. There's a phenomenon that happens called olfactory fatigue. When you've been around something that stinks a lot for a long time, you no longer recognize it. I know this because I grew up in Iowa around pig farms. And so we had this hog farm that was close by. And it smelled really bad. And there was also this treating plant for fish. They dried fish out, and it would send up a stench, which was horrific, for about 30 miles around. And so after a while, if you've been smelling it, you no longer notice it. Your nerve endings, I don't know how your brain reacts, but it's that phenomenon called olfactory fatigue, and you just kind of get used to it, and you don't even notice it. Well, something similar happens in people's interior, whether it's with, you know, living in sin, you know, they get used to it and think that's normal. In our society, we're kind of seeing that all around us, people being habituated to different forms of sin. And it also takes place in people when they get used to carrying some heavy burden on their soul, you know, the anger or bitterness, etc. And they don't even perceive many times just how borne down they are. And other people looking at them can say, gosh, what's the chip she's got on her shoulder? You know, why is she so bitter and angry and frustrated? And that person will be very offended if you even hint at the fact that they're angry and bitter and frustrated, even though it's apparent to everyone around them that they are.
Well, and John Paul II had this wonderful message in Lent of 2001, and he says, in proclaiming forgiveness and love of enemies, the Church is aware of adding to the spiritual heritage of all humanity a new mode of human relationships, an arduous mode, to be sure, but one that is also rich in hope. In this, the Church knows she can rely on the help of the Lord, who never abandons those who turn to Him in times of difficulty. Love is not resentful. With these words from the first letter to the Corinthians, the Apostle Paul recalls that forgiveness is one of the highest forms of the practice of charity. And then Father Philippe follows that by saying, it bears repeating, however, that unless we understand the importance of forgiveness and practice it in our relations with others, we will never achieve inner freedom, but will always be prisoners of our own bitterness.
I think it really sums up everything we've just been talking about.
Thank you.
Freedom can be diminished by a dependence on someone whom we love too much, and in the wrong way, who becomes so indispensable to us that we partly lose our autonomy. But a refusal to forgive also binds us to the person we resent and diminishes or destroys our freedom. We are as dependent on the people we hate as on those we love in a disproportionate manner. When we foster resentment towards someone, we can't stop thinking about them. We are filled with negative feelings that absorb a large part of our energy, and so there's an investment in that relationship that does not leave us available, psychologically and spiritually, for what we should be concentrating on. Resentment attacks our vital forces and does us much harm. When someone has made us suffer, our tendency is to keep the memory of the wrong alive in our minds, like a bill we will produce in due time to demand settlement. Those accumulated bills end up poisoning our lives. It is wiser to cancel every debt as the gospel invites us to. In return, we will be forgiven everything, and our hearts will be set free. Whereas nurturing resentment toward others closes us to positive things they could contribute to us.
That forgiving is not the same as condoning a wrong. Because I think sometimes in our society, we confuse forgiveness with agreeing, just like we have confused the idea of tolerance with agreeing. You know, we're always told, oh, practice tolerance to those who differ with you. Well, that's not the same as agreeing, just like forgiving is not the same as condoning a wrong.
That's very, very true. I think it's helpful to point out some differences in the way that men and women forgive as well. I was just listening the other day to a very interesting seminar on the differences between the way that men and women communicate. And one of the things that this woman, professor from Georgetown University, pointed out was that, who's written several books on the topic, was that women are quite readily forgive because they want to connect with other people. They want to show that they're on the same page. They don't want to offend. And so they'll quite readily ask for forgiveness. And men, on the other hand, are very, very oblique. They do ask for forgiveness, but in a different type of way, which oftentimes is not recognized by women. So men they don't like to feel like they've been subjugated to someone else. And so when they ask for forgiveness, they'll do it in an indirect way by doing a favor for someone, or calling them a pet name, or something along those lines. And it frustrates women to all get out, because they think, gosh, why doesn't he just say he's sorry? Well, because men don't ask for forgiveness in that way, not normally at least, although they can, of course, and they do need to learn how to ask for forgiveness. But women also need to learn how to read when men are asking for forgiveness, because they ask in a different way. But coming back to your point, certainly forgiving is not saying that what you did was fine. Certainly that is a confusion that many, many people have. No, when you forgive someone, it's not saying what you did was just fine, don't worry about it, hunky-dory. No. To forgive, in a sense, if you want to take a graphic image, you know, when someone hurts us and we're angry and bitter about it, we put our hands around their throat and we're strangling them. To forgive means simply let go of their throat. You're not saying you didn't hurt me. You're saying, okay, I am not going to try to exact retribution. I'm not going to try to get revenge. I'm going to let go and let God take care of this. God is the final arbiter of justice, and he will deal with this situation as he sees fit.
Well, I think we confuse the thought that this getting even or this revenge or my right to be angry at you, we think that that gives us freedom because we're exercising our freedom to be angry or our freedom to exact justice. But Father points out something that I underlined three times. You know, our refusal to forgive actually binds us to this person that we resent. So if you really want to be free from this frustration and this anger, then you have to forgive them so that binding can be loosened.
That is so true. And I think that's why St. Paul in his letter to the Galatians used so frequently that word aphesis. You know, freedom comes from the forgiveness. If we don't forgive, we remain chained up. We remain bound to that person, to that situation, to that those limiting factors that took place in our life. And frankly, if you don't learn how to forgive, you will go through life adding chain after chain until you can no longer move. And that's why, unfortunately, sometimes you find those wizened old people who are just bearing so many burdens, not just physically, but in their soul. And it's sad to see.
I love that you said women forgive more easily. And I think that there's some truth to that. But sometimes we forgive on the outside, but inside, we can't let it go. And a really good example would be, you know, you think about it all the time and it robs you of your sleep. So here's this situation where you or somebody you know was wronged and there's suffering that involves, and you, you know, say, okay, whatever, you know, I forgive you, but you don't. And so you spend countless hours replaying the situation, and well, if this would have happened, then this would have happened, and if you had just done this, then this wouldn't have happened, and right. It's wasted, useless energy. And that to me, and because I have done that in my own life, and because I have stayed awake at night lamenting something that I can't change, I see how that does. It totally binds you, and it prevents you from doing anything more productive.
Yes. And let me clarify. I said that women say I'm sorry more readily, but women actually do have a harder time actually forgiving. And why is that? At least in general, I'm not saying every woman, but in general, women have a more difficult time forgiving because they have a greater sensitivity. And because when they're wounded, it tends to go deeper into their psyche than it does into men. Men tend, again, and I don't want to absolutize and say that every man, but men tend to be a little bit more superficial and not allow things to go as deeply into their heart. Women tend to be more open, receptive, sensitive. So when they are hurt, those hurts tend to go deeper. So they will say, I'm sorry, more readily than men, but it is more difficult for them to actually forgive. And I'm glad that you brought out that point to clarify.
One of the biggest obstacles to forgiving is the feeling that the other party's behavior has deprived us something important, even vital. This confused feeling nourishes resentment. The thing in question may be material, or affective or moral, such as not getting the love I had the right to or esteem, or even spiritual. The behavior of the person at the head of my community keeps my spiritual life from developing as it should. To live at peace, even when it is people around us who are causing suffering, we must take a fresh, radical look at our frustration. It does not correspond to reality. Other people's faults do not deprive us of anything. We have no valid reason for resenting them or their actions. Rather than wasting time and energy blaming others for what isn't working out, or reproaching them for what we think they're depriving us of, we should strive to acquire spiritual autonomy by deepening our relationship with God, the one unfailing source of all good, and in growing in faith, hope, and disinterested love. That others are sinners cannot prevent us from becoming saints.
I think as women, we do feel very deeply, and we have that capacity, thank you, Lord, to really love with our whole hearts. So when you love with your whole heart, when that love is betrayed or harmed or cheapened in any way, it's so difficult to forgive that and to move past that. And we can go through all the motions, and there's that old adage, you know, fake it till you make it. But the point is, at some point in time, we have to consciously turn it over to the Lord and say, okay, I cannot heal this. I cannot love this person the way that I should love this person. And I can't allow myself to be loved the way I should be allowed to be loved on my own. So you have to take this and you have to heal this. And I think that that's when God can transform our hearts. And that's when He can really help us be capable of loving freely and receiving love freely. Father Philippe says that God has loved us humanly so as to render our are human hearts capable of loving divinely? And sometimes I think that's the point, is that we try as human beings to forgive, to love, to strive for perfections with just human means. And we forget that by joining our hearts to God, He gives us divine means.
That is so true, Donna, and you hit upon a very profound element there. I think, you know, St. Paul reflects this when he says, you know, in Philippians 4:13, I can do all things through Him who strengthens me. And in another passage where he says, it's when I am weak that I am strong. And that passage for many years struck me as kind of being oxymoronic. I was always wondering, what is St. Paul trying to say with that? Because, you know, when I'm weak, I'm weak. You know, I lifted weights in high school. And, you know, if you're a wimp and you can't lift, you know, bench press more than 100 pounds, you're a wimp. Okay, you're weak, on a human level. So what is he trying to say from a spiritual level when he says, when it's weak, I am strong? Well, and it dawned on me one day that what he's saying there is that when I recognize my weakness and I accept myself as I am before God, as being limited, not being able to do anything, and I accept His divine sovereignty in my life, that Jesus is my Lord, when I accept Him and I accept the reality of who I am and my role vis-a-vis God, then His grace begins to work in me. His grace begins to transform me. And it's no longer me, my little pitiful little self by myself, but it's God's grace working in me and through me and transforming the world and transforming me through His grace. So when he says, it's when I'm weak that I am strong, he's hinting at that reality. We allow God's grace to work, and it's not just us anymore. And the same thing happens in forgiveness. When we try to forgive just by ourselves, we can come to a certain level of forgiveness. But when we ask for God's grace, we ask for His help, Lord, help me to forgive, and to say those words like Jesus did on the cross, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they're doing. When I ask Christ for His grace to forgive, then the profound healing takes place in my life. And it's really a healing on a deeper level takes place. And I experience this interior freedom that Father Jacques Philippe is hinting at.
You've been listening to Fountains of Grace, Reflections on Contemporary Spiritual Classics with Donna Garrett. Donna has been joined by Father Daniel Brandenburg discussing Interior Freedom by Father Jacques Philippe. To hear and or to download this discussion along with many others, go to discerninghearts.com. This has been a production of discerninghearts.com. Join us next time for Fountains of Grace, Reflections on Contemporary Spiritual Classics with Donna Garrett.